recording. Yay. Hey, Aloha Love Tribe. What's up? Welcome to Bitcoin Peace and Music. I have John Haar here with me, who is the managing director at Swan Private. And he used to be a Wall Street guy at Goldman Sachs for 13 years. Welcome, John. How's it going?
It's going great, Valerie. Thanks for having me. It was really great to meet you a couple months ago in Miami. We had a great conversation there. So I'm looking forward to continuing that.
Yeah, me too. I know it was really fun chatting with you about music and life and of course your Bitcoin journey. And I just was like, oh, come on the show and let's talk about, you know, how people can invest for themselves for the future using Bitcoin and save and everything that you're up to. So why don't you tell everybody, like, what's your scoop and, you know, how can people use Bitcoin to make their lives better for their future?
Yes, would love to chat about that. Loaded question. Those are the best kind of questions. So, I'll give my short-ish background, but from New York, went to college outside of Philadelphia at Villanova University. I was a finance major who graduated in 2008, 2009 was my senior year. And if you remember what was happening in the world of finance at the time, that was a very eventful time to be graduating with any degree, really, but especially a finance degree. And I could still remember people coming to career events on our campus, and they would literally come from these big banks, all the places that finance majors like myself wanted to get hired. And they would come and they would say, hey, you know, we're here because it's our job. You know, we work in HR and recruiting, but we have no jobs to offer anyone right now. And, you know, we're just sitting there like the wide-eyed college kids, like, okay, very nice to meet you, but nothing to do here. So that was, you know, interesting experience. I was fortunate enough to get connected with people at Goldman Sachs, which is where I worked for 13 years, starting in 2009. But even back in 2009, I didn't even know I had a job at all until late April. So like weeks away from graduating, didn't know I had a job. That was an interesting experience. But the reason I bring that up at all is because it definitely was, I would say, the start of my Bitcoin journey, even though Bitcoin was literally just being created and released at the same time. Mm-hmm. I had no idea that was happening. But that experience of my senior year and the financial crisis is what led me to look into other explanations for what was happening with the economy, for what was happening with the monetary system. And that is kind of what led me to what I would just say Austrian economics, because I was looking at my teachers in school. I was looking at Ben Bernanke, who would literally say things on TV and be proven incorrect, you know, 5 or 7 days later, which was kind of amazing to see. And you're like, well, I thought he was supposed to be the expert that's, you know, monitoring all this. So I basically went to look elsewhere for answers. I found the Mises Institute, which is Mises.org. And that just resonated with me so much more, the content there. And, you know, long story short, I end up becoming a proponent of Austrian economics, of what they call sound money, which is amazing because I never even heard the term sound money when I was in college. Mm-hmm. And that led me to become a proponent of the gold standard. And this is, you know, 2009, 2010 timeframe. I didn't even hear of Bitcoin until years later, but it's probably not surprising to a Bitcoiner that for someone to be a proponent of the gold standard, it's not that big of a leap to eventually come around to Bitcoin. So that's kind of my journey in a nutshell. There's plenty of more things we could dig into there, but how about I'll pause there for now, see if you want to dig into anything specifically.
Yeah, I'd love to hear, I mean, you know, reflecting back on that time, obviously, and comparing it to now, you know, and how far we've come. Like, you said you first heard of Bitcoin in 2017. Like, is that when you first got into Bitcoin, or is that when you first heard about it?
I first heard of it from a friend in 2013. And it was more like the friend was just like, hey, there's this crazy thing out there. And, you know, there's this mysterious founder that nobody knows who the founder is. And, you know, there's crazy things like it's tied into the Silk Road and blah, blah, blah. And it was just like, hey, there's this crazy thing. And I actually kind of got the idea of Sound Money right then and there because I had been reading about Sound Money for years. So one of my first reactions was, wow, that's really cool. They're trying to do digital sound money. You know, it might sound like I'm patting myself on the back a little bit for that one. But unfortunately, my next reaction was that will never, ever catch on. And my thinking was, you know, I've been talking to people about the gold standard, the history of precious metals as money, and very educated, high performing people. If I bring up the gold standard and say something like, hey, you know, maybe the gold standard makes more sense than this fiat standard we have now. I mean, they just looked at me like I was a total crazy person, like I was just, you know, speaking about witchcraft to them. So my thought was like, if they can't even, you know, grasp the idea that gold made sense in some way, they're never going to be on board with the internet version of gold. And then I should say, I had plenty of questions in 2013. I had no idea how the protocol worked. You know, they say there's 21 million. I didn't know, you know, what mining was, what running a node was. So I had questions about that too. But my overarching thought was it's never going to catch on. So I dismissed it totally in 2013. And it wasn't until 2017, which I think was like the first mainstream bull run. That was the first time that it caught my attention again. And I said, okay, this is a real thing that I think is catching on to some extent.
And then how did you like, because I want to, I always love to hear the people's like before and after and what was the bridge moment? Like, how did you say, okay, I get this. This is the thing. I'm going to let Wall Street go. And I want to proceed with my Bitcoin bright orange future.
Yeah, it's a great question. I think it was probably a series of like small light bulb moments. Like, okay, they kind of accumulated over time. Because in 2017, there wasn't really an obvious place to go if you were super into Bitcoin. I mean, maybe if you were, you know, a developer, software engineer by background, maybe there were some more obvious places to go. I don't have that background. So if you're just a finance person, you have an investment background, there weren't obvious places to go. And actually, there were some crypto hedge funds that were started around that time. And I think this is a pretty funny thing. It says a lot about how people on Wall Street think. So after 2017, I kind of got known within my team at Goldman for someone who knew a good amount about Bitcoin. Because, you know, Bitcoin's on CNBC, it's on Bloomberg, people talk about it on the floor. And people kind of knew me to be, okay, John, you know, follows this Bitcoin thing to some extent. And I had plenty of people say to me, they're like, oh, you like Bitcoin. Why don't you go work at such and such crypto hedge and, you know, you trade Bitcoin and other cryptocurrencies. And I just thought that was such an interesting reaction. But like I said, I think it speaks to how people on Wall Street think. Because from my perspective, it was like, I'm interested in the history of money. I'm interested in how different forms of money affect society. I'm interested in implementing what I think is a better form of money that will help not only the economy, but society and our structures at large. And for them to say, oh, you should go trade, you know, Bitcoin, it's almost like telling someone who says, I'm really interested in energy production, telling them, oh, you should go trade oil futures. And, you know, just because you're interested in energy production doesn't mean you want to trade the ups and downs of some number on a chart.
Yeah.
But people who work on Wall Street, that's how they think. So they're just like, oh, it's another thing to be traded and you just become a Bitcoin trader. So that was definitely a disconnect. Anyway, I thought that was an interesting anecdote of how people on Wall Street think.
And do you find that like, because obviously today you've been on this journey, it sounds like since 2017, so 5 years, 6 years. And like, do you still have relationships with those folks? Are you like, are you slowly pulling them over to the orange future? How is that working, especially since now we're in, you know, everything's down from the all-time highs? Like, how are people responding? And how were they responding when things were up in, at 69, you know, versus right now? If you have those old friends, I'd be curious.
Yeah, it's really interesting. So at first, if you kind of track how people have responded, especially on Wall Street over time, it's super interesting. So in 2017, and by the way, for time frame, I left Goldman at the beginning of 2022.
Oh, wow. Okay. So you stayed there until, Okay. So you got Bitcoin in your DNA reprogramming, but you made the move in 2022. Okay. Thank you. Sorry. Yeah. Great.
No. Yeah. And it's, I think that's important just because that gave me the opportunity to have these conversations about Bitcoin, about money, about economics with people on Wall Street from 2017 to 2022. So I got to see firsthand how their views changed.
Sure.
And if you rewind the clock back to 2017, a lot of the common retorts were Bitcoin or crypto, you know, probably used synonymously. It's a scam. It's a Ponzi scheme. It's only used for illicit activities. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's going to come crashing and burning for whatever reasons. And that was kind of like the known view in 2017. Oh, another huge one was blockchain, not Bitcoin. If I had a dollar for every time someone on my floor said blockchain is super amazing, but you know, Bitcoin is a fad, I might be retired by now. It's just like everyone repeated that over and over again. So that's 2017. Then as time goes on, I think people started to realize. So the things you started to hear in 2021, for example, were, okay, well, Bitcoin's interesting and yeah, it's almost a $1 trillion asset, but it's really correlated with tech stocks. And why do I want to own Bitcoin in my portfolio if it's just the same thing as owning tech stocks? And there's plenty of other criticisms, but that was a common one. And I always tried to highlight to people, you know, if you look back at your own criticism and 5 years ago, you were saying this thing's a scam and it's a Ponzi scheme, but today you're saying that, you know, it's correlated with tech stocks, or they say the government's it's going to shut it down. You know, doesn't that reflect that your criticism from 5 years ago was not really a fair criticism? You know, are people really acknowledging that they were, quite frankly, very wrong about their criticism from 5 years ago? And I would argue that they weren't acknowledging that. They just kind of moved on to a new thing of like, oh, it's correlated with tech and it's so important, the government's going to shut it down. So I think that reflects how much Wall Street has come in terms of recognizing what Bitcoin is, or at least slowly accepting what it is. They still have a million critiques about why it's not going to be good. And then just to answer your point about, you know, how did they think at 65K versus, you know, 20K? I think every time it drops by over 50%. And by the way, Bitcoin has a history of falling by more than 50% at least 8 times. People on Wall Street don't know that. They, you know, they think every time it happens that, you know, this is it, if Bitcoin's dead. And that's really what they think. They think, oh, it dropped and this is the final nail in the coffin. And they don't really even distinguish between, you know, FTX and some made up token versus what Bitcoin is. They couldn't articulate the differences to you. So it's kind of like this thing where when it's hot, they talk about it more just because it's hot. And then when it falls, they're like, oh, that's it. That's the final nail in the coffin for Bitcoin. So I wish there was better analysis being done about these things on Wall Street. But I think the truth is that most people, again, you know, most people, there's going to be exceptions, but they haven't really looked into the history of money, the nature of money, the fundamentals of the current system. And if you don't do that, it's very hard to have a fair opinion on Bitcoin. So it's much more likely that they just repeat things that they've heard in the media. And that's a lot of what you get when it comes to Wall Street.
It is fascinating to me about, you know, the what is money and certainly what is sound money versus, you know, something that's a fiat type money. I feel very like I didn't learn that until 2 years ago. Like, really, I didn't get it. I didn't know that there was, I didn't even understand. I'm like, I've done business my whole life. I used to be an accountant. I worked at Deloitte and I've helped my ex-husband start a couple businesses. And it was like, never even occurred to me, what is money? It was just like, well, that's just the money. It's over there. It's made and they print it and there you go. It didn't even, I don't know. It just never dawned upon me to go deeper into what is sound money and do we have it? And is this an issue? What do they say? Like when, because obviously we've got a couple things, you know, we've got separating money from the state. you know, and from an entity or a human being that can go, cool, let's go just, you know, put another zero on the balance sheet and oops, your purchasing power just got diminished by 40%, little savings person. Like, how do they, when you have those, do you have those conversations about like the limited supply and the separation of, you know, money and state? And do they respond to that kind of conversation?
They certainly respond. I would say
it's there's a response.
I think you get everything from people who quite frankly just have not even considered the question. And therefore they don't really have a thoughtful response. I think that's one type of person. Mm-hmm. I think you get apathy a good amount, actually. You'll get someone shrugging their shoulders and saying, you know, what are we going to do? Get rid of the Federal Reserve? You know, and they're just like, why are we even having this conversation? You know, it doesn't matter.
Like, it's never happening.
Yeah. It's just like, who cares? Let's go back to work. And then you get the third person who, to their credit, has more of a formed opinion on these topics. But I would argue that it just comes from repeating a few short quips that they saw in their mainstream economics textbook.
Yeah.
You know, they'll say we need more money to create more economic growth. They'll say we need to have the ability to expand and contract the money supply, mostly expand, in order to get out of recessions faster. Or we need it because we need to respond to shocks within the economy or, you know, supply chains, whatever. Or we need to, some people might say we need elastic money, you know, fancy way of just saying money that can be created out of thin air. We need that because we need to redistribute resources within society. So like all these types of one-liners that people just kind of claim, but then when you press them on it, again, in my opinion, I don't think there's much there. Or they might say something about, you know, well, didn't the gold standard cause the Great Depression or something like that? Or, you know, didn't it make it worse? And if we have a fixed supply of money, aren't people just going to hoard it and that they'll never spend it again? And then the economy just grinds to a halt. And, you know, I've unpacked a lot of these things in articles that I've written, but I think they don't really pass the test of any type of legitimate analysis. But those are the things that get repeated by people on these questions. So you get a whole host of those responses. But I think one thing is interesting because the question of what is money in general to someone who works at Goldman Sachs, it's really thought of as too basic of a question for them not to know the answer or to admit, like you just admitted, you said, I hadn't even considered, you know, that question until 2 years ago. And guess what? 99.9% of the world hasn't considered that question even yet.
Yeah.
So for someone who works at Goldman Sachs, this, you know, elite financial services firm where everything they do has to do with money, if someone admits, I haven't even considered the question, what is money, the history of money, they're kind of like they think they're making themselves look bad. So rather than them admit that they haven't considered it, mm-hmm. they'll usually just like throw out a few one-line responses and be like, oh yeah, that answers the question. That's a much easier approach for them to take than to say, yeah, I've never actually considered that.
Yeah, the ego does that. I think it jumps in the way a lot. For all of us, we're all prone to that mechanism. You know, you had said at the beginning of this conversation about like you're interested in sound money and Bitcoin and how it can make the world, how it impacts society and making it either a better or a worse place. And to me, that's like one of the biggest things I'm drawn to about learning more about Bitcoin. Obviously, this podcast is called Bitcoin Peace and Music, and I'm like, how does Bitcoin or a sound money standard cause more opportunities for peace, for a better world, for more, you know, harmony on the planet versus what we've got going on right now? What would you say to that?
Yeah, my view in general is that, and some of this gets into like, you know, systems of governance and what I think would be a peaceful society. But I think generally speaking, to me, what a peaceful society, a harmonious society generally means people not forcing one another to do something and that could obviously take a whole host of shapes and sizes. But that to me is generally what a peaceful society would mean. And that could mean at the individual level, there's one person taking advantage of another. It could mean there's this huge centralized entity taking advantage of many, many people. I think all of those things would be considered the opposite of a peaceful and harmonious society. So that's kind of my, you know, philosophical view on what would be a good society. So generally that comes with a view of limited and defined government. You know, again, people will disagree about this. So I'm definitely not professing that this is like the only view. Even within the Bitcoin community, people have different opinions about this, of course. But in my view, that would be a society that has a limited and defined government, because when there is a centralized entity, aka a government that just has control over people's lives, that could be abused pretty badly. And I think that ends up being one of the, I think, you know, the 1900s proved this to be true. That ends up being one of the greatest sources of conflict, is these huge centralized entities that have the ability to extract the resources from their citizens, send people to war, start wars, et cetera, take advantage of other countries. So I think if you can limit that to a certain extent, that would be a huge step forward in terms of a more peaceful, harmonious society. And then, but there's another angle there. It's not just about shrinking government. It's also about empowering individuals to get more safety, security, financial freedom for themselves. And I think that's another huge aspect of Bitcoin, is empowering people to be able to work, produce value that other human beings see and want to receive in exchange in an economy. And then when someone does that, they can be compensated in a form of money that will retain its value. They can save for their kids' future, for their family's future, for their own future. I think that is absolutely critical. And I think that's kind of a missing piece of our economy now. So I think, you know, maybe to summarize, two big aspects is, one, it's kind of limit the ability of this centralized entity to have control over people's lives. And then number two, empowering individuals and families to do more for themselves, I think would lead to a much, much healthier society.
I agree. And are there any examples of that you've seen currently or throughout history where this has worked in the past to have this more limited version of government and people work, you know, being more self-reliant and self-responsible in their local, you know, areas?
I would argue the founding of the US is a pretty good example of that. You know, we just, from a monetary system, we were still on a precious metal standard, I'll call it. You know, gold and silver were forms of money. Yes, we had banking on top of that, but it wasn't this free for all of fiat with zero reserves that we have today. And generally, statement of fact, the US was founded as this country that was going to have a limited and defined government. And that was a very unique experiment at the time of the founding of this country. Relatively speaking, the US, I suppose you could argue, compared to other countries, still is somewhat limited and defined government, but it's definitely grown much, much bigger than it was at the onset of the country. But I would argue, and this is where it gets tricky, because you're kind of looking at history and determining cause and effect, and someone else could look at history and say, no, I attribute a different, you know, cause to that effect. But I think the founding of this country would be a good example of limited and defined government and something closer to a sound money system that allowed for some of the greatest achievements in terms of prosperity and progress and economic growth that I think the world has ever seen. If you look at what the US turned itself into from the late 1700s and the 200 years after that, I think there's some really great achievements there. I would attribute that to limited and defined government and a decent form of sound money. Others might come to a different conclusion, but, you know, to each their own.
Totally. I like hearing that. I know I'm not the biggest history buff, but Bitcoin has definitely got me excited about learning more about what worked in the past, what didn't, how can we make it better in the future. It's really changed. It's certainly, you know, they always say Bitcoin changes you. It does. It definitely changes like how we think and how we operate in society. To me, I think what's been, I love to always ask my guests, like what, how has Bitcoin changed your relationships, John?
Oh man, could go a few different ways with that one. First thing that comes to mind is that my wife actually mentioned Bitcoin in her wedding vows, and I mentioned Bitcoin in my wedding vows. and unplanned.
Unplanned?
Yeah,
dude. That's awesome.
I know. I doubt she'll mind that I'm sharing this, but she said something to the effect of, you know, now that I've been with John for several years, I know why the U.S. went off the gold standard in 1971. and then I made a joke about the ring, and I said, you know, I'll cherish this ring, which is made of gold. That was my second choice, but because you can't make a ring out of Bitcoin, gold will have to do.
Oh my God. That's awesome.
Yeah, some cheesy Bitcoin lines made it into our wedding vows. And in general, I would say I am the person who people are like, oh yeah, if you want to talk about Bitcoin, you know, John's the guy. At Goldman, I was that guy. You know, my friends who I play hockey with every week, they know if you want to have a conversation about Bitcoin, John's the guy. My friends from college, my wife's friends. And I try not to bring it up all the time because you don't want to be that person who does that. But I will say that people who, you know, don't care about Bitcoin and they have careers that have nothing to do with money or investing at all, mm-hmm. they will be interested in the conversation. I think, you know, they enjoy having it. They enjoy asking questions, having that back and forth. They don't want to do it every time they see you, but I know plenty of people who, you know, really don't care about Bitcoin in the grand scheme of things, but like I've had a 20-minute conversation with them about Bitcoin and they'll ask a lot of questions and you can tell they're somewhat interested. So yeah, I've become known as the person who is always willing to talk about Bitcoin. So it's definitely changed relationships in that sense, I would say.
And let's do a compare and contrast of your new Bitcoiner friends at Swan and beyond and all of your Goldman friends and like the ethos and how people operate on, you know, Wall Street versus how we operate in Bitcoinlandia.
Oh man. Yeah. It's, well, there's just like certain, you know, news stories, certain aspects of society that it's like totally normal for the Bitcoin community to want to talk about. And then, you know, totally foreign to the Wall Street community or, you know, even beyond that. I can actually give you a good example. This just happened the other day. I was talking with a few friends from college and they all have successful jobs in like the broader world of finance. Like they all do very different things, but they're in financial services. And we were talking about something and it kind of was a natural progression to bring up a CBDC. And I just mentioned that and they're kind of looking at me blankly. And I was like, oh, you guys don't, you know, read about CBDCs on Twitter all the time like I do in the Bitcoin world. Mm-hmm. So that was one of those eye-opening moments for me where I was like, oh man, I've only been working at a Bitcoin company for a year. But to me, mentioning a CBDC, you know, everyone knows what it means. Everyone has an opinion on it. You could mention CBDC to people who work in financial services in New York, and most of them will probably say, dude, what are you talking about? So that's like a pretty interesting, you know, disconnect. There's some things that everyone in the Bitcoin community knows, and then other things that people outside will be like, what are you talking about?
Yeah, it is interesting when you have these little circles of, you know, spheres of humans, you know, and like what goes on in those conversations and what doesn't go on in a lot of them, you know. Also, like when we were at Pacific Bitcoin last year, I think it was James Lavish. Everyone's like hugging each other, like, this is the best. Blah. And he's like, this doesn't happen on Wall Street. They don't have hug fests over there, you know? And I was like, oh yeah, maybe not, you know? Would you equate that vibe, you know, similar, like, because to me, this is like a bunch of just, you know, we're just these rebels and burners and people who see the revolution, this peaceful, wonderful, gorgeous revolution. Like, I don't equate that vibe with the Wall Street folks.
Yeah, spot on. I think that's fair to say. There are no, you know, hug fest festival vibe type things at a on Wall Street. I think that is fair. And the way I would put it, and before I say this, I should say, you know, there's so many good people who work on Wall Street there.
Totally.
You know, it's not the type of thing where it's like everyone's an evil banker who, you know, wants the benefits of fiat money. And the reality is that most of them don't even understand fiat money. Like, they don't even understand how it benefits Wall Street. They're just there because they did a good job in school growing up. They want to get a good job to support their families, and they want to get paid well when they're on that journey.
Yeah.
And I totally respect that. Most people who work at a place like Goldman Sachs or any bank on Wall Street, they want to earn a good living and support their family. And they want to work hard while doing it. And I respect that totally. But what you don't get with someone like that is like a mission-driven, this overarching view of this is why I'm here, is because I want to see this company impact the world, impact the monetary system in this way. You just don't see that. And I don't want to say that's true for 100% of people. There might be some people who, you know, really love their company that they work for on Wall Street. But generally speaking, most people, I've used this analogy before, but they're kind of like mercenaries. They're kind of like a hired hand. Mm-hmm. It's just like, hey, come here, do this thing. If you do it well, you'll have a good career and you can support your family. And there's not like this bigger motivation to say, I'm here doing this because I think it's going to have this impact on the world. So that's a huge difference between Bitcoiners and people who work on Wall Street, I would say, for sure.
Yeah, I find it to be, I mean, obviously I spend so much time on Bitcoin. I don't make money on doing these podcasts. And I, you know, so many people are out there doing spaces and educating and doing meetups and doing, I mean, lots and lots and lots of hours of their free time because they believe in this mission, you know? And so of course there are some folks, you know, who get to work at companies like yourself, which you're so lucky. Yay. Swan's the best. You know, and but there's other people who are just like, I believe in this. And I'm this evangelist for Bitcoin, you know, in their own unique, you know, zone of how they get to talk about it. And so I haven't seen that. Even I was shoveling snow yesterday, and I was thinking about the music industry, even just the arts and music industry. And it's very, it's still a little guarded, you know, it's in some, you know, echelons of the industry. You know, it's not like a kumbaya, oh, we all believe in bringing music forward, let's go. You know, it's still, there's that mine kind of thing, you know? And so it's so unique, the Bitcoin, you know, way of thinking, like people who get the mission, you know, it's so inspiring and hopeful. I can't imagine my life right now without Bitcoin. I just can't.
Totally. You make me think of a couple things. One is, if I had the financial means to retire tomorrow and never work another day in my life because I had, you know, so much of a nest egg built up that I no longer needed income, let's just say I found myself in that position somehow, I would still be reading about Bitcoin every single day.
Yeah.
And talking about Bitcoin. And, you know, I'm super fortunate to be at a place like Swan. I think it's an awesome company. But again, even if I left it for some reason tomorrow, I would be reading about Bitcoin. I'd be talking about Bitcoin. I'd be playing around with, you know, different aspects of Bitcoin. I could never say that about my old job at Goldman. What one of the things I did for like 6 years was as a portfolio manager of corporate bonds. So we managed portfolios of corporate bonds. there's just no way I could tell someone with a straight face that, you know, I was excited to read about the corporate bond market every single day. And that if a weekend came that I was going to be reading about what was going on with different corporations, it was somewhat interesting because you're following the markets, you're following the news, but it wasn't like, man, this is the thing that I want to spend my time on. So that's just a huge difference between Wall Street and Bitcoin. And the other thing that you reminded me of, I think Larry Lepard said this, but it totally resonated with me. I hope I'm remembering that it was him. It sounds like something he would say, but he said something to the effect of, you know, if I'm gone tomorrow or whenever I'm gone, if my legacy is he, you know, raised a good family, raised some good kids, and he advanced sound money in the world, like that would be a good legacy. And I don't want to sound like get too dramatic about it, but like I totally resonated with that. I'd be like, you know, raised good kids, raised a good family and sound money. Like what those to me are like the top priorities out there. Yeah. I don't know if I sound crazy saying that, but that's how I view it.
You don't. Well, I think that's the thing that a lot of folks don't understand. Like the sound money opens up all these doors and windows for the other good things to happen on the planet. It's not just like, yay, we have sound money. It's not like, yay, we have stock certificates or something. It's like, no, we have this thing, this tool for it. That's an inclusive tool for people. And it can provide fairness and opportunity for them to go contribute to their lives and society in a way that, you know, I think we're intended to as humans, you know? And so that's what I think a lot of people, they don't get that bridge. There's not the connection of why sound money is important as a tool for humanity, you know? And I'm still every day, I'm just here to learn. I'm learning every day and I'm still just blown away and it's just incredible. Okay. Well, let's talk about Swan. Let's talk about what do you do over at Swan and, you know, how can people work with you and, you know, what you guys are up to over there, you know, big picture and what you do specifically in Swan Private.
Yeah, sure. So Swan as a whole, Bitcoin only financial services firm where people can not just purchase and accumulate Bitcoin, but can learn about Bitcoin as well. We're pretty huge on that. The research and education side of things is a big focus for us at Swan. And it's kind of pretty night and day when you look at a company like Swan versus what I would call the mass automation exchanges. You know, their MO is get people to trade as many tokens as possible, do mm-hmm. as many transactions as possible, and automate everything. So, you know, some of these big exchanges out there, they kind of have notoriously bad customer support. I don't think that's very surprising. They're just going for the automated approach. They want you to trade tokens all day long, and that's great for them. Swan takes a totally different view of this. Being Bitcoin only, we think in the near term, Bitcoin is going to be an increasing part of people's portfolios. That's kind of an intermediate step towards Bitcoin becoming a globally used dominant form of money. You know, that is years down the road. I'm not saying that's going to, you know, happen a few months from now by any means. But mm-hmm. in the near term, you know, people in Bitcoin have this term get off zero, because the truth is the vast, vast majority of people are still on zero, meaning they own zero Bitcoin. Mm-hmm. And you don't have to go to having 50% of your net worth in Bitcoin tomorrow. It, you know, start with 1-3%. I think that is a really, really reasonable allocation to start with. And like anything in life, once you have a little bit of skin in the game, you're going to start looking at it differently and you're going to want to start learning about it more. And Swan is a great place to do that. We have so many resources, but one I'll just shout out quickly is something called Swan Canon. And it's kind of like these little rabbit holes within Bitcoin, whether it's privacy or self-custody or Bitcoin's energy usage or can the government shut down Bitcoin? Yeah, this is the Swan blog here. You know, we put out some articles about a whole host of different topics. There's a lot of really good writers who work at Swan, I believe. So this is stuff that you're just not going to find at one of these mass automation exchanges. Mm-hmm. So that's what separates Swan from these other platforms. We also make it as easy as possible for someone to accumulate Bitcoin and get that Bitcoin into their own self-custody. And that's kind of, yeah, go ahead, please.
Oh, sorry. I was just going to say, okay, so this is not the Swan Canon, right? This is your blog. Where can people look at the Swan Canon?
That is the blog. It should be as easy. I bet it's going to be something like,
I know, because I looked up at Learn and this
should be swanbitcoin.com/canon. Yeah, we have some articles from Lynn Alden on there, which shout out to Lynn Alden. She's one of my favorites. I think I learned more from her reading her stuff in 3 years than I learned from any research analyst on Wall Street. I'm not exaggerating when I say that.
Yeah, she's seriously like, oh, a stellar human and stellar brain. I'm just like, oh, wow. it really, I feel like this consolidation of genius in the Bitcoin community, and certainly Swan, you guys have definitely corralled a lot of the best and brightest and coolest and kindest people that I have met so far in this world. And so it's very, very impressive and inspirational. That's for sure. Okay, cool. Okay, let's go back to what you do and how can people work with you, and what would be like, obviously Swan Private's got its levels that people could work with you guys on. And then if they're not at certain levels, they can certainly go. This is one thing I think a lot of people get confused on is, Bitcoin's so expensive, I can't afford it. Or, you know, and I don't think some people don't understand that, like, you can buy a dollar's worth of Bitcoin, guys, and you can DCA and every day and all that. And some folks don't understand that.
Yeah, you could sign up for a Swan account. I think you'll get $10 of Bitcoin for free. So you could start with $10. We talked about kind of Swan as a whole, but then there's Swan Private, and that's the group that I work with at Swan. So Swan Private is what we would call our high net worth concierge offering within Swan. High net worth is not necessarily, you know, that's a term that could mean lots of different things to different people. On Wall Street, it could literally mean someone who has multiple millions of dollars of net worth. That's not the people we're targeting. Mm-hmm. But there is some level. We say if you're looking to invest $100,000 or more in the coming 12 months or so, then you would qualify for Swan Private. And, you know, what comes with that is a few different things, but you would get a dedicated point of contact. So someone like myself that you could reach by email, by phone, by text. Anytime you have a question about your account, about Swan's platform, which is growing every month, by the way, about Bitcoin in general. And the questions about Bitcoin are pretty interesting, because I'll always try to answer a client's question about Bitcoin, but it's not necessarily just me. You know, we have 80 plus passionate, hardcore Bitcoiners who work at Swan.
Wow.
And if I don't know the answer to something, I can run it up the flagpole at Swan and usually come back with a pretty thoughtful answer. So I think our clients kind of like that, having this, you know, Bitcoin partner. And we get Swan Private clients who are like, hey, I'm brand new to Bitcoin, but I want to allocate some of my wealth to it. Can you help me out? We get other clients who are like, I've been in Bitcoin for several years, but I love Swan and I like the benefits of Swan Private, so I'd like to work with you guys. So we get a whole spectrum of clients, but it's been awesome. You know, one other thing I'll just say about working with Swan Private clients, super impressive people. People who have interesting career backgrounds, a whole variety of career backgrounds. They're generally successful, entrepreneurial, and they're passionate about Bitcoin. So it's always interesting talking to Swan Private clients. That's been just a really nice surprise.
That's awesome. I mean, what a blessing, huh? To get to have that diversity of conversations and people, in addition to your killer team of 80 people. Oh my gosh, that's just awesome. What a jam. Okay. So then how can everybody find you? We can obviously go to Swan Bitcoin. You can go to Swan Private and Twitter. Is that a good way for people to reach you on Twitter? John at Swan?
Yeah, definitely. Which was certainly an adjustment for me, because people who work on Wall Street, you know, they're not really active on Twitter whatsoever. Mm-hmm. It's just not a Wall Street thing. Mm-hmm. If anything, you're worried that something you tweet might, you know, come back to bite you, and that your employer is going to be watching you or something like that. So it's been nice to get involved on Twitter the past year or so. I try to be active on there in terms of like posting threads that I put some thoughts into. I'm not the type of person who just like tweets nonstop. So you might see me post a thread and then post nothing for a day or a week. But yeah, would love to interact with people on Twitter. And then looking up swan.com and Swan Private, you can find out more information as well.
Okay, so you just said swan.com. Is it swan.com or swanbitcoin.com? Because when I was up here at Swan Bitcoin.
I'm almost sure. Yeah, both will work. Swan.com will take you to swanbitcoin.com.
Okay, cool. I just wanted to make sure that I had the right one, because I was like, oh no, did I screw up? Okay, one last question for you. What are you listening to these days on your musical playlist? What you jamming to?
Yeah, that is one of the things that we bonded over when we met. Yeah, definitely big music fan, like whole range of genres. I was super into electronic music. I mean, still am, but like very into it from 2011 until 2016, I would say. I've been to a lot of festivals with electronic music. So yay. I still like all that stuff. I get most of my music through Spotify these days, and it could be anything. Like, for me, it depends on set and setting. So yeah. I could have I'm just thinking of playlists that I have on Spotify. I've got like a morning songs playlist that has a certain vibe to it. Yeah. I've got this you're going to sound like I'm bouncing around, but I've got like a 70s rock playlist that was like songs my dad had me listen to when I was in the car, like classic rock. And I've got like an 80s and more 90s, like alternative rock. Again, like when I was a kid driving around in the car, when this is before iPods or anything, you would listen to the radio. And like, I love those kind of 90s alt rock type stuff. And then like newer stuff that Spotify suggests, kind of like vibey, chill, electronic music, definitely like that kind of stuff too. So whole range of stuff out there.
Nice. Well, I'm excited to do some dancing with you at Pacific Bitcoin. Are you going to Miami?
Okay. So I thought I was going to Miami. I am not, because my wife and I have a very close couple, our friends who are getting married that same weekend.
Oh yeah.
And we've got to make it to the wedding, which is going to be a great time. But unfortunately, it is the same weekend as the Miami conference.
Yeah. All right. Well, that's okay. We'll definitely be rocking in LA in October. So that's going to be fun. I mean, you're going to be there, right? You have to be there.
I will be there for that. And, related to what we're talking about, I think it's getting rebranded the Pacific Bitcoin Festival. So I'm even more looking forward to it.
I know. Me too. I want to I want to play some music and hear some music. I think that's, I love the vibe last year. It was such a cool launch experience. I loved I'm not a basketball player, but I just loved that they had that whole basketball thing going on. It was great. I mean, top notch. All across the board. It was a great event. So I can't wait to keep, experiencing how it evolves and grows over time. It's really fun. So yay. Dude, well, thank you so much for taking all this time. And it's so nice to see you again. And I'm happy you're rocking it. And go Swan.
Thanks. I enjoyed it. Great chatting with you. Thanks for inviting me on. And I look forward to hanging out with you in person pretty soon.
Yeah, that sounds great. All right, you guys. Thanks so much, John Haar from Swan Bitcoin. Yay. And I hope you guys have a great rest of your afternoon. And thanks for tuning in to Bitcoin Peace and Music. Mwah. All right. Aloha. Thanks, John.
Thanks. Yay. Yeah.
Hey, aloha. Thank you so much for tuning in. If you liked what you heard, it would be awesome if you could help us out. Please like, share, and subscribe on all your favorite listening platforms. And our favorite listening platform is a value for value model podcasting 2.0 app called Fountain.fm. What's cool is you can stream sats to your favorite content creators so that they can keep making kick-ass content for y'all. So go over and check it out. And until then, really just remember, you fucking rock, and I love you. Peace.